The days of mix-and-match booster shots may soon be upon us. Plus, former President Donald Trump sues to block Congress from getting his January 6th records. And Democrats say their social spending plans will improve the lives of many. But what's the effect on growth?
It's not a slam dunk, for sure, that all of this stuff would boost the economy.
It's Tuesday, October 19th. I'm Peter Granitz with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The Food and Drug Administration will soon allow people to get different booster shots from their initial COVID-19 vaccine, according to sources. The FDA could authorize the mixing and matching as early as this week. It's also expected to approve Moderna and Johnson & Johnson boosters this week, too. Chief White House medical advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci told Fox News Sunday that mixing doses might offer more protection than sticking with the same vaccine.
When you boost Moderna or Pfizer against the original J&J, you get a much higher antibody level. That's a laboratory indicator that would predict efficacy.
Former President Donald Trump has sued to block the release of his records related to the January 6th attack on the Capitol. In a lawsuit filed in Washington, D.C., a lawyer for Trump asked a federal judge to block the National Archives from turning over the records to a congressional committee investigating the deadly riot. The suit argues that the documents should be kept private because of presidential privilege. Committee leaders called the lawsuit an attempt to delay its work and that it would continue its investigation while fighting the case. The Associated Press is reporting that Texas lawmakers have approved new congressional districts that Democrats and activist groups say dilute the voting power of minorities. Governor Greg Abbott is expected to approve the new map. Texas added more residents than any other state in the last 10 years and as a result gained two new seats in Congress. Minority groups account for 95% of that growth. The Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund sued, arguing the new map violates the Voting Rights Act. And a federal judge has ruled that the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill did not discriminate against white and Asian American applicants. Students for Fair Admissions sued the university over its use of race as a factor in admitting undergraduate students. But Judge Loretta Biggs ruled that UNC's use of race was narrowly tailored and that the university considered race-neutral alternatives to diversify its student body, such as boosting financial aid and accepting more transfer students. Students for Fair Admission said it would appeal the ruling. It is a busy time in the IPO market. Just yesterday, we learned two more companies are looking to go public, following word that Saks Fifth Avenue plans to do the same. Clothing rental business Rent the Runway is aiming for a valuation as high as $1.5 billion in its IPO next week. And now, Moonbug Entertainment is hoping to cash in. The company behind the hit children's show Cocomelon is reportedly looking to either sell itself or go public. For more, we are joined by Joe Wallace, a markets reporter for the Journal. Hey, Joe.
Morning.
Joe, let's start with Rent the Runway. We knew the IPO was coming, but the valuation is quite a bit higher than expected. What's driving that?
Yeah, so Rent the Runway struggled during COVID-19, like a lot of businesses, but there's been a rebound this year. Widespread access to COVID-19 vaccines has allowed people to gather socially and return to the office, all of which has boosted demand for hired clothes. And the company said in its IPO filing that at the end of September, its number of active subscribers had grown to roughly 112,000.
And meanwhile, sources tell the Journal that Moonbug is considering listing itself or going public. What do we know about their plans?
Yeah, so Moonbug, we know, is looking to cash in on the popularity of Cocomelon either by selling itself or by going public. If it opts for the former route, it's received interest from multiple suitors and is seeking a valuation of more than $3 billion. The Journal's reported that one of these suitors is a company backed by Blackstone, the private equity giant, and run by former Walt Disney executives Kevin Mayer and Tom Staggs. But we know there's no guarantee those conversations will lead to a deal, and Moonbug is also weighing an IPO, which executives believe would lead to a valuation significantly higher than $3 billion.
There have been quite a few IPOs and deal announcements in the past few weeks. Are capital markets heating up, or is this just the end of the year rush?
Yeah, well, as you say, you know, the new issue market in particular is running at a record pace, and the Rent the Runway IPO is going to be closely watched, despite the company's size, because of its pretty high profile, and investors are waiting to see whether the year ends on a strong note and whether others planning to list, such as Rivian Automotive, will succeed.
Markets reporter Joe Wallace, thanks for your time.
Thanks a lot.
Coming up, Democrats say their plans to offer free community college and daycare will change people's lives for the better. But what do they do for economic growth? That's after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Democrats are trying to move two massive spending bills through Congress. One would pay for traditional infrastructure. That's the roads, the bridges, the broadband. That has got a lot of support. But on the larger bill, they need to iron out financial and philosophical differences. It would pay for so-called soft infrastructure, things like climate change programs, subsidized childcare, paid family leave. It's unclear what will make it into the final bill as Democrats amend it to keep its chances alive. We have national political reporter John McCormick with us to look at how some of the soft infrastructure programs may affect economic growth. Hey, John.
Hey, hello.
What is the economic argument the White House makes? We hear a lot about the social benefits, but what is the economic argument for the White House's push for the social spending bill?
Yeah, well, they say that a lot of these things can help grow the economy. They point to the fact that they've got 17 Nobel Prize-winning economists who do suggest that both of these packages, both the hard infrastructure, the traditional infrastructure, and the soft infrastructure on these things sort of enhancing the social safety net, that they both do qualify as infrastructure and critical investments in human capital that these economists do say will help more people participate, and that will mean that the economy will be more productive. As we drilled down on some of these individual programs, we looked at the free community college program that's been offered in Tennessee. It's called Tennessee Promise. And at this point, at least, it's a fairly new program, but it's hard to argue that it has really done a lot to boost the economy there because, you know, looking at the early first 3, 4, 5 years of the program, half the people who go to community college still drop out, even if it's free. So some of these programs are just hard to sort of know what their long-term consequences will be at this point. But it's not a slam dunk for sure that all of this stuff would boost the economy.
Okay, so let's look at some of the other programs, like free or subsidized preschool. We hear a lot about how this could affect quality of life. But what's the economic argument here?
Yeah, it really does center very much so sort of on the, you know, getting more women into the workplace. That's sort of the heart of it, that the proportion of women in the workplace has actually ticked down in recent years. And if you could get more women working, then you've got more workers, you've got sort of a bigger economic engine churning. You know, a lot of women or families, even their one spouse has to stay home because there isn't good childcare available or it's too expensive. So making some of these benefits either more affordable or free could help get that economic engine churning a little bit more. We looked at a study of nearly free daycare that started being provided in Quebec, Canada in 1997. And some economists who studied that effort did find some bad outcomes for kids, partly because the level of quality wasn't emphasized. So there was a lot of daycare, new daycare demand, but the quality of the care wasn't there to support it. And that sort of left a gap in terms of the outcome for the kids.
Is the economic argument that these are sound investments hard to prove because some of these programs are so novel that they haven't been tried on a national level before?
Yeah, that's part of it. And also just that they haven't, you know, where they have been tried, they haven't been around for decades yet. The data is still fairly early. One program that has been around fairly long time is the paid family leave in California. It was passed in 2002 and was implemented in 2004. So that's been around for a while. We looked at a research paper that was done by four economists, three in academia, one at the Chicago Fed Bank, and they actually found that the program had not ultimately boosted women's wages or, you know, made, you know, brought more women into the workforce. It's hard to argue, at least based on this research that we reviewed, that it is boosting the California economy.
If you are a parent weighing whether to leave your career to raise a child because childcare is so, so expensive, you might not be inclined to look at or even care about the macroeconomic picture of these programs. Are there some things that are just so important to an individual or to an individual family that they're worth paying for?
Yeah, everything cannot be measured by GDP as much as some economists might want to do that. I mean, you know, quality of life matters to people, the environment matters to people, you know, your commute time, how long it takes you to get to work matters. Yeah, this prism that we looked at, you know, is helpful, and it is a way that economists look at investment. But we do have to acknowledge there's lots of other variables in life and in terms of making decisions that can't be measured purely by economic growth. You know, just in terms of sort of one historical point, FDR passed the New Deal, and, you know, that was a very long time ago. Economists are still debating whether some of those investments, you know, paid off from a GDP standpoint. You know, some of these things, it might take two decades to figure out really whether, you know, subsidized childcare is really making a difference in the economy, you know, whether paid leave is really making a difference. It just takes a long time for economists to study this stuff and really figure out what the outcomes were.
John McCormick is a national political reporter. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And finally, if you are a regular listener of this show, and we hope you are, you know about the worker job vacancy disconnect. 4 million people quit their jobs in August, and there are even more job openings in the United States. So it's a candidate's market out there. And at the recent Wall Street Journal Job Summit, JP Morgan Chase's global head of talent and acquisition, Michael DeCilio, shared some insight into what candidates are looking for in a new job.
There is lots of opportunity out there. And what we're seeing is, and I think all companies are seeing, is that candidates' expectations are changing. What's important for them today is really around purpose, being connected to a mission greater than their own, and really aligning the work to people's individual passions and the social impact that they could have.
You can hear more conversations about the hiring market on recent episodes of the Journal's Your Money Briefing podcast. And that is what's news for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Peter Granitz for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.